Hi, this is Paul Sorrell along with Stephen Mount, and you are listening to the Summer Library Podcast 5.2. What do you think of the new library construction that we got to see on April 8th?
It's looking good. It's taking some definite shape. There, the windows are in, makes it seem more expansive.
Mm-hmm. And drywall is up on the second floor, probably more than the other two floors.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
I was impressed with the guys working on the drywall on their stilts.
You want a pair of those for home, don't you?
I do, for home use.
I could use a pair of those to paint in my bedroom.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they could hook you up with some. Just go over there and ask them. Hey, man, where'd you get those stilts?
Nice stilts.
But they didn't have any problems moving around with them.
Yeah. How high would you say they were?
3 feet, maybe?
The guys or the stilts?
No, the stilts. Stilts.
So it's 3 feet, so you can get up nine, well, I guess the reach of your arm as well, so.
Yeah.
You get up 10.5 to 11.
Maybe so.
Feet.
Yeah. It was cool.
Wonder if they come higher than that, if they're expandable.
I don't know. But I would get on one, and I could just see my face would be planted in the floor. Just, it's pretty amazing what they can do. And we got to go up onto the roof. And,
yes.
Of course, the roof is going to be covered by the time it's all said and done. But if it wasn't, that'd be a great place to go up and have a break, you know.
have a lunch break. Have picnic tables up there.
Yeah. But that's not going to happen.
Look up under the dome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we were there, they were taking those two beams, those two cross beams that were, I guess, there to support the dome before it got to a point where the dome was supporting itself. And so you can look up once you get to the dome floor and see the dome.
Is that the attic level? Is that what they're calling
it? Yeah, I guess so. Fourth floor. I don't know what it's going to be. I guess it'll just be storage. And then you've got the third floor with some really nice views from into the quad area. So
I enjoyed seeing the views from the second and third floors. It's, it was neat to see out over campus, look over campus and see.
Yeah. And sunsets will be nice from there.
Yeah.
So, and thunderstorms.
Yeah. Last time we went, the glass was going in at the front or the south end of the building as well.
Yeah.
It's looking nice, taking more shape.
Yeah, it is. Taking shape. And we'll be in there in a few months, and that'll get some getting used to, but I'm sure it won't be a problem. Lots of good things to look forward to.
Yeah.
In the next
few
months. And so this semester is coming to a quick end.
It is. It's gone really fast.
It does seem like it's gone fast. But then when you account for 5 snow days, that's a week of class right there. And but it has seemed very fast. But I guess they all do. I mean, we sit here and go, yeah, it seems fast. But they all seem fast.
Yeah. But just when you take a minute to stop and think back about it.
Mm-hmm.
What is there, about 2 or 3 weeks left after?
After this week, there's 3 weeks, then exams.
Okay.
I think we're, you know, less than 30 days maybe from graduation. Yeah.
Well.
So another class will graduate and go into the...
Spread their wings and
that's right. Go to the big, cruel world. And anything exciting going on in your end of the library world?
Not particularly, just business as usual.
Yeah.
Interlibrary loans and reserves and circulation.
Yeah.
It's pretty much where I spend my time during the day.
Now, do reserves usually get put up at the beginning or the middle of the semester?
It's mostly concentrated to the beginning, probably, and then the end of taking things off reserves. So, and there's some sprinkled throughout this semester as well, but probably mostly concentrated to the beginning and the ends of semesters.
Right.
What about for you?
Yeah, I'm busy getting things done for the end of the semester to promote our staying open until 2 on finals week. And, of course, we'll have a date where we would ask everyone to return their books. I'm not sure what that date is now, but we'll have signage up.
It's usually the Friday before finals, I think.
Okay. All right. So in a couple weeks, yeah. I guess. But, you know, really the opposite is what we hope for when we move into the new library. We want everybody to check out as many books as you are allowed and keep them until we get into the new library.
Yeah. Don't try to return them while we're moving.
No. No, please do us a favor. Move the books for us. So, yeah, it'll be a different approach then. Now, I know it's kind of late in the semester, but, you know, some people wait until the end to do papers and research projects. So we just want to remind anyone who needs research assistance that we have the research coaches, and we also have the writing lab. Do you know how long the writing lab will continue? Any idea if there's a deadline on that?
I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
What is it, usually in the afternoons on Mondays and Tuesdays and Thursdays?
Maybe so. I know yesterday they were open, so.
So maybe Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah, from 2 to 4.
That sounds like that.
Chris
yeah.
Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
A few semesters, a couple years maybe now. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a pretty popular service.
Yes.
Offered.
And. You know, if there's no shame in asking for help writing a paper, or you know, so no
it's in that lab in back of the yeah. toward the back of the library in the juvenile behind the juvenile collection.
Right. I think you know sometimes we get I don't know if it's pride or embarrassment or whatever that you know sometimes you just have to ask for help.
Right.
And sometimes you need a tutor.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know everything.
So the Hundley Center upstairs will do the tutoring for various subjects and
absolutely.
Writing lab.
Yeah, and then there should
help you editing papers and citations and that sort of
right.
thing. And our research coaches can help you locate resources. So
right.
and cover there a gamut of options if you're willing to ask for help.
Exactly, and that's the key: being willing to ask for help. And there's no stigma, you know. So
not looked down upon.
No.
Or anything like that.
Not at all. So if you need some research assistance, we have research coaches that know their stuff very well. And so just come on into the library and ask. Don't be embarrassed or anything like that. Well, since we met last, the NCAA basketball March Madness tournament mm-hmm. concluded.
Yeah.
I think you were going with Gonzaga there, weren't you, Mr. Mount?
I was, and I was right in one regard, and that it was a non-Kentucky school who won.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Non-University of Kentucky, even. The Mighty Wildcats. I know a lot of Wildcat fans. I think Jenny Lowry.
Yes.
The library is a Wildcats fan.
Library's own, Jenny Lowry.
Hopefully her mourning period is over, hopefully. but yeah, they were undefeated, looking for a record, 40-0.
That's what they were looking for, yep.
And lost to... A team?
Wisconsin? Yeah.
Yep.
Big Ten.
Yeah.
You know, the sad thing about being 38 and 1?
38 or 39.
Yeah, 30. Yeah. Is that one loss comes where it comes. You know, if you lose the first game of the year and then you go undefeated the rest of the year, okay, you've won the championship.
Right.
But if you lose... In the semifinals.
Your winning streak is over at the end of the season.
Yeah.
It's much less aesthetically pleasing than 40-0.
Right. But I would rather be 39-1 having lost in December than, you know, 38-1 and having lost in the semifinals.
Yeah. And sometimes you can even take solace in knowing, okay, we lost to the team that won the championship.
Right.
But that was not the case
this
year either. It was
just
Duke. One of those games. Anything can happen when you're playing against other good teams, and it's what makes March Madness exciting.
It does.
Yeah.
And, of course, on the women's side, Connecticut won, and they won their third in a row. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think their coach, Gino Auriemma, has to be considered the greatest women's coach of all time.
Really? Even better than Pat Summitt?
Possibly. I think he's won more championships.
Has he?
Wow. Possibly. I can fact check that later. But at least in modern years, I think he's... I know she hasn't coached for a few years.
Right. She has Alzheimer's.
Yeah. But yeah, he seems to be... They seem to be a dominant program for a while. It was Tennessee or Connecticut every single year.
Yeah. And then, of course, since we're in the NCAA Division II, we have kind of interest now in maybe who wins those tournaments. And in the men's, Florida Southern won the championship. And women, California University of Pennsylvania.
Hmm. Of course.
That's so odd.
Yeah.
They are located in California, Pennsylvania.
Huh.
How would you like to tell people where you live?
I live in California, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. What? Very odd.
A couple thousand miles separating those two.
Yeah, yeah.
So. States, but yeah, why not?
But Union did very well in the women's tournament.
Yeah, this is our first season in NC2A, right?
First full season.
First full season.
Yeah, where we could compete in postseason. You know, Sweet 16.
Yeah, it's so, very respectable.
Yeah, they did really, really well. Now, I know that this is your season of sports, your favorite season of sports.
Baseball season.
Oh, I thought it was hockey playoffs.
Oh, well. NBA playoffs, hockey playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, baseball.
Baseball season, yeah, underway. Got about 9 or 10 games. Most teams have about 9 or 10 games under the belt, I think.
And your Cardinals are tied for first.
So far, yeah. It's very early. It doesn't mean anything. I think they're 5-3.
Yes.
Currently, so.
Well, the Yankees are pulling up the cellar.
Yeah, it's not that these games don't mean anything, but at the beginning of the season, it's such a small sample size that it's hard to take anything conclusive from it. But I'd rather be 5-3 than 1-9 or something like that. So
you were telling me, well, I think last year, was it what by Flag Day, you should be able to tell?
Yeah, Flag Day or Memorial Day, maybe.
How well a team is going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Not big picture necessarily, not for every single team conclusively, but yeah, it's kind of a general date.
Yeah.
You can tell what a team is by that point in time.
Okay.
So, when is Flag Day usually?
Is it May?
Late May?
Late May? I don't know.
June 14th.
June 14th.
According to Google.
Okay.
June 14th.
So that's not
a couple
too far
more weeks. Memorial Day is an earlier date.
It's
25th this year. Yeah. So between Memorial Day and Flag Day, maybe.
Yeah.
We should get an idea. If they're for real. If they're pretenders or contenders. Or wait, no. Yeah, pretenders or contenders.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You're so ESPN right now. Okay. Yeah. I know this is baseball season is just getting started, and of course the NFL wants to dominate any type of news.
It's a 12-month season.
It is, and it's news obnoxious.
Cycle.
You know, it really is. But if you are a Tennessee Titans fan, which I'm sure you're not, the
I'll be a St. Louis Rams fan as long as they're in St. Louis.
Yeah, well, maybe they will be the Los Angeles Rams.
They might be.
Who knows?
Then I'll probably be a Colts fan.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah. They're good. Organization, but I read today where Philip Rivers may be traded to the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about that. That he wouldn't be willing to move with the Chargers if they went to LA, but he'd be willing to go to Tennessee.
Yeah, I learned that he is from this area, and I think his wife and her family are from Nashville.
Okay,
so that makes a little more sense.
Go home. Yeah, he's still good, but he's about 32 years old.
Yeah. So Tennessee's going to get another quarterback that's
twilight years. Yeah.
But of course, they didn't.
Probably has a few more. I mean, Peyton Manning is a little different breed, but he's played well into his upper 30s.
Right, and Tom Brady the same way. But you know, Tennessee took a chance a few years ago on their first round pick of getting Jake Lockhart.
Locker.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't pan out so well. So
He retired, right?
Yeah.
And he was 24 or 25 or something.
Yeah. He didn't work, and then I think they've just struggled to find the right quarterback.
Yeah. I think the NFL draft is coming up in a couple weeks, so there's always the talk of Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston.
Yeah. Man, it just gets old. But
that's where all the money is right
now.
Yeah,
that's
what
they're in the entertainment business. Oh, I did read something interesting from a former New York Giants. I think he was a linebacker, and I can't recall his name, but he was saying that one way that the NFL could cut down on concussions is for the players to stop wearing helmets, which in rugby, you know, they don't wear helmets, and there may not be as many cases of concussion. So wouldn't that be very interesting to see an NFL game where the players they may wear maybe like leather helmets like they did back in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, there's a theory behind this. I want to say maybe it's Peltzman theory,
okay,
or something like that, where you're willing to take more risks if you feel more protected.
Right.
So it's kind of an anti-seat belt kind of thing, but maybe we take more risks in cars. Mm-hmm. Because we feel safer, because we're wearing seat belts, so we do things that make us less safe, negating the benefit of the seat belt.
Right.
So I wonder if it's that kind of idea of they do things with helmets that they wouldn't otherwise do because they feel safer.
Sure.
Wearing them.
Right. I don't think you would lead with your head if you weren't wearing something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think we'll ever see that happen.
No, but that would be interesting to watch.
Yeah, they could play two-hand touch, flag.
Yeah, they could, and they would cease to exist. So that's very interesting. Now, a very special show is coming to the W.D. Powell Theater in a week or so, less than a week when this podcast airs. And it's Into the Woods, which was recently made into a movie with Meryl Streep and Johnny Depp and others. And that's going to be it's going to open on Thursday, April 23rd, and it's going to run through Tuesday, April 28th. Now, did you see the movie?
I did not. I did not see the movie. I'll probably rent it at some point.
Yeah, or you could check it out because we do have it in the library.
We have it in the library, so maybe I'll just check it out from the library. Save a dollar from Redbox.
That's right. And I think we just got a bunch of movies in not too long ago that were recent releases. So,
okay. Do you know what any of the others are?
Let's see. We got Birdman.
Okay.
And some others that were probably...
Won some award, Best Picture.
Yeah. Some award.
I don't keep up with the awards.
I really don't either. But I like to know which.
Won a Best Picture award.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you saw that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
It was different. It was unique.
Yeah. It was that. Yeah, that's a good.
It was that.
Yeah, it was that. So, but Into the Woods is a play. A musical, and it's based on a lot of fairy tales that kind of Stephen Sondheim, the writer of the musical, kind of mashed together and put his own spin to it. Mm. And so it will be very interesting.
I think that's a popular genre now with some TV shows.
Yeah, it is.
Carry that theme.
Yeah, and superheroes. Yeah. Superheroes and fairy tales.
Yeah, we live in a fantasy world.
We do. Wonder why. So, to talk a little bit more about that, we have invited David Burke, the theater director, to come and be our guest on this podcast. So, we will talk to David right after this.
Did you know that the Union Library offers a variety of tools to help you with your research? This is Melissa Moore, one of the research coaches at the Union Library. We have research guides for every major, which provide you with selected databases, websites, and other research helps. We have research coaches who provide customized research assistance and are scheduled at your convenience. And we have RefWorks, which helps you manage your citations and generate bibliographies. So, as you tackle your research projects this semester, don't forget to use the tools we provide for you. The right tools make all the difference.
David Burke joins us today. David is a professor of theater and director of theater here at Union and has been with the university for over 25 years. He is a tenured professor who has directed over 70 plays, including classics, contemporaries, comedies, tragedies, and musicals. He holds an MFA from the University of Houston in acting and directing and worked in professional theater for 9 years prior to coming to Union. He holds a membership in Christians in the Theater Arts, Theater Association, Southeast Theater Conference, and the Jackson Theater Guild. He has worked as a consultant, actor, director, and designer in countless situations in theater and film, and we are pleased to have him stop by today for a visit. Welcome, David.
Glad to be here. Nice to see you, Paul.
Well, you know, a week from today, I believe there's going to be an opening of a show here on campus. Know anything about it?
A little bit. So we've been involved in it for quite some time now. So we're excited about it because this is a sort of a big breakthrough moment for us at Union.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since Union took on a huge Broadway musical.
Right. And the show is Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods.
Exactly.
And so tell us a little bit about Into the Woods.
Well, a lot of people may be aware of the film version of it that came out around Christmas time, and so our timing was really good on this because I'd gotten the rights to do the show before they announced when the movie was going to be released. Then once they sort of announced the release time, they sort of cut off people's ability to be able to do the play until after the movie had its run. Now you can go back and do it, but our timing is perfect, so we're hoping that as people will remember the film, that they'll want to kind of see what it's like in a live situation.
So. Right. And that movie has come out on DVD.
Yes, right.
And we have a copy of the DVD in the library, as well as the original cast stage version.
Right, which I've seen both of those. They're incredible.
Yeah. So what is it about Into the Woods? What's the story about?
Well, Into the Woods is kind of a unique play. It is a musical, of course, but it takes several different stories that we know of as children's stories like mm-hmm. Cinderella or Jack and the Beanstalk and sort of melds them together into one story. And what would happen sort of in your imagination if all these people started meeting all together in the woods, mm-hmm. Little Red Riding Hood, Jack, the baker and his wife, Rumpelstiltskin, you know, whatever. So it is kind of interesting to see what impact they have on each other, as well as what impact they might have on us as an audience when we start seeing, you know, letting our imagination run wild with
right.
what might happen when they all start meeting in the woods.
Is there a certain darkness to this show?
The play is a little bit on the dark side in that it examines a lot of kind of issues of exactly in a symbolic way what does it mean to venture out into the woods?
Mm.
It's kind of like all these characters are forced to go on a journey,
mm-hmm.
and part of the journey is it's based upon their own personal desires or their own wishes. I wish I had this. I wish I had that. And what happens when these wishes are fulfilled to us? There are certain responsibilities because I've made certain choices.
Right.
And then what happens when my desires are, what I wind up receiving is not exactly, it doesn't turn out exactly the way I thought it would.
Right.
All of these stories end with they lived happily ever after. And this kind of, the play kind of examines what goes on in the after.
Yeah.
So is it, are we just as happy, or is happiness what we really need?
Exactly. So. Yeah. And some things maybe that we wish for aren't really necessarily the best for us.
Exactly. They may seem great at the moment,
mm-hmm.
but once they're fulfilled,
mm-hmm.
and we start having to sort of face the consequences of having this new responsibility,
right?
We kind of wonder. There's a great line that Cinderella has in the play. She eventually goes back, and she said, "I love her line." She says, you know, there are times when I actually enjoy cleaning. So she wants to go back to where she could be kind of the house cleaner.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Sometimes fame, fortune, responsibilities aren't what they are all
exactly right. It's like you hear this a lot of people winning the lottery or something like that, and they win millions of dollars, and then it destroys their lives because they don't know how to handle it.
Exactly. Exactly. So. We need to be careful what we wish for.
Exactly, and that's part of the theme of the play itself. You know, you better really think it through.
Right.
And we've known stories like that. You know, whenever you get a genie and you're given three wishes,
right.
You know, most of the time the people that get those wishes screw them all up.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's a commercial, and I can't remember what it's for. Maybe Geico, because they have funky kind of commercials. But this guy asks the genie for $1 million. Well, the genie takes him literally and gives him
a million deer. So, I've seen that. It's great.
We have to be very careful.
That's right.
Yeah.
You better be careful.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other thing is the impact, not only that it has on us as individuals, but the impact that it has on our family.
Oh, yeah.
And the impact that it has on our society, on
Absolutely.
Our culture, on our community. And it changes things dramatically. You know,
right.
So all of a sudden, you know, somebody does win the lottery, and all of a sudden they're wealthy beyond measure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when, you know, relatives come out of the woodwork.
Exactly.
You know, so
yeah.
Neighbors come
Quote,
in.
Quote, relatives.
Yes, right. Non-profit organizations are trying to run you down. So,
yeah.
And in the case of, say, Jack and his mother, you know, Jack goes up in the beanstalk, and he finds the hen that lays the golden eggs. You know, he finds the harp that's, you know, just all these. Now all of a sudden they have unlimited funds.
Right.
How does that change their lives?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So this is a very thought-provoking show, not only entertaining, but to give you something. There's a lot of levels to this.
I would say so, almost more levels than we can even handle, you know, because it just asks so many probing questions because, again, you've got all these different storylines going on at the same time,
right.
And as they intermingle, they just continue to raise questions.
And these are obviously fairy tales that were mostly familiar with.
All of them are very familiar.
But just turned a little differently.
Turned
right?
slightly because now all of a sudden, you know, the baker and his wife, you know, we find out, you know, in a sense that the baker, his sister is Rapunzel, you know, so
yeah,
which
right.
you didn't know, you know,
right.
so. And Little Red Riding Hood comes into their bakery shop to get stuff to put in her basket to
right.
take to her grandmother.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So.
It's very cool how Stephen Sondheim intertwined all these things.
Right, right. And, it's, you know, he's a genius.
Yeah,
you know,
he
so,
really is.
And I know when this play opened, I think it won 8 Tony Awards when it was produced.
Did that come out in the late 80s?
80s, right,
okay.
right. So
okay.
I think that was for 1989 or something like
okay.
that. So.
You said earlier that this was the first time that theater department had put on a big Broadway musical in a while.
Right.
The last time I remember, Fiddler on
the
Roof.
And that was many years ago.
Yeah,
it was sort of the year that the Ned opened downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and I believe, if I'm not, I may be mistaken on this, but I think we were the first sellout in the Ned or something
okay.
like that. So.
And didn't Michael Penny play
Michael Penny played Tevye in
yeah,
that show.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. So this, your production of Into the Woods, is this a collaboration between the theater department and the music department?
Yes, finally we were able to kind of find a way that we could kind of work our calendars to where we could wind up pulling something off like this. So it has 18 characters in the play, and I would say a little bit more than half are music students,
okay.
and the other half are theater students that can sing.
Okay. Now, does this happen very often that you all get to collaborate?
This is the first time that we've done it since Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay.
Now, oftentimes I've done what I call sort of off-Broadway musicals that
mm-hmm.
are smaller cast, single sets that we've enjoyed doing, and there's always somebody from the music department that might come and be the musical director for that show.
Okay.
But it's not been the sort of collaboration where we're trying to put together an orchestra, you know, in which we'll have a 7-piece orchestra for this show.
Well, that was my next question. What kind of accompaniment are you going to have? Is it just obviously – since you said a small orchestra, it's going to be a small orchestra and not just a piano or
right,
some type
right.
of band. But what type of instruments are in the orchestra?
I think we have a violin. I think we have a cello. I think we have we'll have a piano, obviously. We have
right.
a synthesizer that's able to play a lot of other sounding instruments,
yeah.
and we have percussion. And cool. there's a lot of percussion in the play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're really, really excited because the percussionist for us is the main percussion teacher at Bethel. And he is considered to be one of the best percussionists in West Tennessee.
Wow.
So we're excited to have him.
Good deal. Good deal. Now, have there been any unusual challenges with putting on this particular show? Of course, you're always faced with challenges doing a show.
The biggest challenge for us in some ways, part of it is the collaboration, because now you have all these people that you have to work around schedules to be able to rehearse.
Right.
And if you know anything about the music department, they are – you know, they're busy to the max, you know,
exactly.
so with the recitals and everything else. So you know, we have some rehearsals that don't start until 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night.
Ooh.
And the other big challenge for us is if people are aware of the W.D. Powell Theater, where we do almost all of our shows, it's a small 3/4 thrust intimate theater that seats 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
The stage is 20 by 24.
Mm.
And we're squeezing this huge musical into this very small space.
So talk about intimate, you know. It's
yes,
going to be very intimate.
And that to me, when we worked out the collaboration, we talked about trying to find other venues, but I just love our venue so much. I felt like we'll just do what we need to. We'll face that challenge,
right.
and try to see what we can do to make it work in that space.
Right. Well, you know, that's going to be a lot. It'll be a different show in this theater, say, than in the Ned.
Oh, exactly. Because the other thing is in a place like the Ned's, what we call proscenium, where the audience is on one side and the show's on the other,
right.
and there's a sort of wall of separation. That doesn't happen in our space,
right.
and so it forces you to work very three-dimensionally instead of two-dimensionally. So mm-hmm. if you want to do a trick, for example, you can't just do it to where it's tricking the people at the front. I mean, on one side,
right.
you have to trick the people on three sides.
Yeah. Now, the music, obviously, Sondheim music is not the easiest thing to sing.
Very complex music.
Yeah. Has this been particularly challenging to the cast?
It's been a major challenge, maybe not so much in the solos that they sing, but definitely, you know, when you get the groups together for the big ensemble numbers,
mm-hmm.
because he never comes, you know, the certain parts never come in when you would think that they come in.
Right, right.
And so that's been a real challenge for us to just stay on beat.
Yeah.
And to know when I'm supposed to sing and when I'm not supposed to sing. It's just, and when I'm supposed to harmonize and when I'm not supposed to harmonize. You know, so that's, you know, taken major amounts of time to work that out.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, let's talk about Sondheim for a second. What do you think makes him so special in the theater world?
I think, you know, and I've had the privilege of seeing a couple of Broadway versions of Sondheim's work. There's something, you know, at least from his vantage point, a lot of times when we think of American musical, we think of them more as purely entertainment.
Right.
And he has done a masterful job of using both sides of the coin. We always say the purpose of theater is not only to entertain but to enlighten.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sondheim right now, of all the current individuals that are writing musicals, has found that niche of being mm-hmm. able to, in a subtle way, in a non-direct way, mm-hmm. challenge his audience to think mm-hmm. and to see, to ask certain questions about themselves and about life,
right.
but at the same time giving this very sophisticated music that just overwhelms you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, for example, even in rehearsal last night, I have 5 children, and there's a great song in there that's called Children Will Listen.
Yes, that is a great song.
And I love the song. And even as I was watching the rehearsal last night, I just started thinking about my relationship with my own children
mm.
and the times in my life when I was not the best father that I should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like I felt something deep inside of me saying, I need to call all my kids and just tell them I love them and
right.
care for them.
Yeah.
And again, to say, please forgive me for the times when I was not the best dad that I should have been.
Yeah.
So, so there's something very moving about that. And
right.
I'm guessing that a lot of people will sit there thinking, yes, children do listen to me.
Yeah.
And so I got to be careful what I, not only
yeah.
what I say,
right.
but what I pray.
And what you do.
And what I do, what I show
you
them.
Know. Now, do you think that his work takes a little getting used to? He's kind of an acquired taste.
I would say in that because a lot of us are used to, say, listening to the radio or something like that, and a lot of the music that we have, you know, it's like three-chord music that's fairly, you know, fairly unsophisticated. We just enjoy the beat or we enjoy the words to it.
Right.
But with his, he doesn't operate that way.
Not at all.
And so there are times when he uses sort of discordant combinations that are, I wouldn't say they're grating, but you hear them in a different way that you're normally not used to, and so it sort of forces you to kind of go, why did he choose to make the song sound like that?
Right.
It's not. It's nothing. There's nothing pop about this.
Not
about the show. And that's why a lot of times, you know, a lot of times we'll see big musical, Broadway musicals, there's always one or two songs that come out and they can be recorded by regular artists and put on the radio, and we kind of go, yeah, they become sort of standards.
Exactly.
I don't think you'll see that very much in Into the Woods. Nobody's going to record some of those songs and make them radio worthy.
Right.
But in the other, that's probably part of it too, because a lot of times in musicals, you step out of the musical and you listen to this song. It's like a pause in the action. Hear a song, it's maybe something they're thinking about, and then they go back into the action.
Right.
His songs tell the story, almost like an opera.
Right.
And so in that sense, that's why they work only within the show, because this song is about what's going on. It's thrusting the action forward.
Right. I think probably one of his biggest hits outside of musical theater was Sindin the Clowns,
which was made famous from a little Mike Knight music.
Right. Judy Collins, I think, made that really popular.
Beautiful song. I actually got to see Bernadette Peters play that role on Broadway.
Really?
It was amazing.
Yeah, I never understood that song. First of all, I thought the title was Send in the Clouds.
Okay. Why would we have rain in our life?
Exactly. Yeah, So I think the first time I remember hearing it was at a youth Valentine's banquet back in my home church, and someone was singing it, and I thought, this makes no sense to me. And it still didn't make sense to me until I saw a recording of the show.
Oh, great.
Then
within context.
Within the context, it made perfect sense, and it's to me, I guess, one of my favorite Sondheim songs.
I love the song. I could listen to it almost every day.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so powerful when you think about it, you know, the relationship between two people, and they seemingly are never on the same page at the same time, but they do care about each other, and, you know, the song is left with, they may never get their act together and be together, and it's kind of sad, but I kind of like sad songs.
But at the same time, you know, I mean, there's always that sort of side for a clowns. We always think of clowns as the circus and it's very entertaining, but there's always that sort of dark side of the clown as well, too. And it's like almost like they're laughing on the outside but crying on the inside.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that you get that flavor within that song. So it's very foreboding.
Right.
So.
And that we're all capable of being clowns.
That's well. We all. It's not that we're all capable. We are all clowns.
Yes, we are. Sometimes more than others.
And we're the clowns that are a lot of times laughing on the outside, putting on a front, but inside, you know, inside there's turmoil going on.
Exactly.
So that we don't want we don't want everybody to know about, particularly, and maybe they don't need to know about it.
Right.
But we're always working through something. It seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And he does a real good job at reflecting that type.
And
of thing.
And he does that really well in Into the Woods as well too, because you just, you know, there's, you know, the baker, they're trying to have a baby, you
right.
know, want a child, you know, and but, you know, there's great responsibility when you have a child, and how do I deal with it? What do I do?
Yeah,
you know, it's interesting because I know if you want to get your license to cut hair or something like that, you got to go through a great test. You got to go through all these study, you know, to be able to use the implements to cut someone's hair.
Right.
But you go into the hospital, have a baby, they want you out the same day. They just put it in a bundle and you sit in your car and you go home with it. You may not know anything. You don't. It's much more responsible to take a child home than to cut somebody's hair. So.
And some people don't need to be parents.
Won't go there. But.
So what is your favorite Sondheim show? If you say Into the Woods, I'll understand. But you know,
I think right now it's probably Into the Woods. But you know, I know, you know, there. Yeah, that's all I would have to say.
Okay.
You know, it's the one you're dealing with at this particular moment in time.
Exactly.
Because all of them are so challenging.
Yeah.
You know, all of them force you to have to because they're asking so many questions of you, they force you to sit and contemplate and meditate and think and pray, really. Yeah. This show's caused me to pray more than almost any other play I've done in a long time.
Wow, so. That's cool. So what about putting a season together for you? How does that come about? What do you think about when you're putting a season of shows together?
Well, since I now have a partner, John Klinowski, which we're so excited to have him at Union, we've been able to kind of do a little bit more because it's now two people working at things, and so we're able to do a little bit more future planning. And so we're going to actually put our season in the program for people this time, so that we are announcing the whole season for next year, which I'm so excited about. But for us, you know, we feel like our first responsibility is to our students. And so if an incoming freshman comes in, what are they going to leave with 4 years later?
Right.
And so we sort of try to think 4 years in advance so that when a student from Union graduates, they have had a taste of every genre in the theater that you can possibly think of, from classics to musicals to comedies to tragedies to melodramas to murder mysteries to whatever it might be, so that they were trying to broaden their experience level as much as we possibly can. So that's kind of the main reason, the main way we look at trying to select shows. And so we think of it maybe, how has it been 2 years since we've done this type of play?
So we
want them to get that flavor of everything.
Right. Now, is there any show that you wish you could do here, but you can't for whatever reason?
Yes, I definitely have one. It's on my bucket list.
Okay.
So,
can you tell us the name of it? Oh, Agnes of God.
Yes,
okay.
Which was a film version of it, too. It's a great film.
Yeah.
But a very intriguing play that is, to me, a deeply spiritual play that probes and asks deeply spiritual questions. But because of certain aspects and natures of the play, I would have to edit too much of it to be able to do it here. And I think that we would get kind of odd feedback.
Yeah, get some pushback maybe from it.
Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
I'm really thinking about it. Since the first time I saw it, it's grabbed hold of me. And then I saw the film after that. The film is not as good as the live play, but I just can't let go of it.
So Agnes of God, maybe.
Agnes of God is my number one.
Okay. All right. And besides the obvious, how does a theater education at Union differ from, say, another school's program?
Say one big thing, and this is probably the biggest thing, because we look at theater, and it's like there's no Christian acting, there's no Christian technical theater. I mean, we're trying to offer our students the best possible hands-on experience, practical experience that they can have in 4 years. But at the same time, both myself and I could probably speak for John on this, we understand what it means to be in intimate relationship with our Creator God the Father through His Son Christ.
Right.
And so because that is who we are in our worldview, you're the expression of your life comes from your point of view, from the way you look at the world.
Right.
And so you can't help, I always think this, when I walk into a rehearsal, Jesus is walking in with me. Because he's in me.
Right.
And so I've become very aware of that. And so I wouldn't say I'm 100% aware of that, but I am aware of it most of the time that when I'm in class or when I'm sitting talking to a student or we're walking or we're doing whatever, the presence of God is in that. And so that changes the dynamic every second.
Yeah.
And so you the more that you can become aware of that, it just translates. And so, like, even in my mind, and I started this when I first started at Union, I think of having a special chair in the middle of the theater. And I should just leave that chair blank every night, but I don't do it.
Instead of a ghost-like, you could have a Holy Ghost chair.
Yes, right. And it's like, in my mind, I invite the presence of God to be in the rehearsal and let him be the director. Right. Let him be the artist. Let him be the one who is the creative force. And so if he has anything to say or anything to add or anything, any change he wants to make, just please tell me. You know, so, and we'll do whatever. We'll try to obey him to the best of our ability.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that going into it, it's just for me makes the theater a very interesting dynamic.
Right.
Because you cannot escape the presence of God. There's nowhere you can go to get away from it. And I love the idea that, you know, and we got this from Francis Schaeffer, when we are redeemed, God redeems not just our soul, but he redeems all of us. He redeems the whole man, which means your talents and gifts that he's given you in the first place. And so by that, they become no longer secular. They become sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I no longer try to differentiate between what is sacred and what is secular.
Mm.
For me, everything becomes sacred.
Yes.
You know, everything, every event, every step you take, every time you meet someone, these are sacred encounters, and you just want to be open to let the Holy Spirit do in that situation what he wants to do.
Right.
And try to be, you're trying to learn to be sensitive, really, to God.
Yeah.
And so I can share one interesting story, because there's a very famous theater person by the name of Lee Strasberg, who's no longer with us, but he married a younger wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens, it's been about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, she happened to be in Jackson. And
who's his?
His wife is, I can't remember her first name, Strasberg.
Okay. You know,
so Lee Strasberg's wife, Mrs. Strasberg. So who's a, you know, she's a widow now.
What was she doing here?
She was here for a special fundraiser.
Who got her here?
The group that was doing this fundraising brought her in.
Okay.
And she spoke at a dinner, and, you know, just very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, so might have been something that I can't remember what the fundraising event was. But we were able to find out, and so she was willing to come over and sort of talk to our students. And she came to an acting class we were in, and we had done scenes, and so she worked a little bit with scenes.
Wow.
It was real, and she was so gracious, so humble, you know, and so loving towards our students. And they just ate it up like candy.
It was
incredible. Well, on the way out of the room, because she had an entourage with her and she had to be rushed off someplace, they were trying to rush her out, I walked her to the door of the classroom, and she turned around and she just looked me right in the eye, and she said, "Pray for me. You know, pray for me that you know, that I can find out the next thing I'm supposed to be doing in life."
Wow.
And so I said, "Great." And I held up my hands to her, and she saw my hands, and she said, "You mean now?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." I said, "Let's pray right now." She said, "Okay." So we held hands, and I just prayed. I prayed the power of God in her life.
Yeah.
I prayed for God to just make himself known to her in a very real way. I just prayed his will be done in her life.
Right.
And as I finished, I could just feel her grip in my hands. She's gripping me harder and harder. And then I opened my eyes, and big tears are coming down her face.
Wow.
And she hugged me.
Mm.
And she just thanked me so much. And she didn't say this at the time, but then I happened to know the person who was sitting next to her in the dinner, and he told me this story. He said, "What happened with you and Ms. Strasberg?" She went on and on during the dinner. She said, "I know the reason I came to Jackson is because I met this strange theater director who prayed for me, and I really feel like it just, you know, that God's going to answer that prayer in my life."
Wow.
So, what, you know, it's amazing to me. You know,
and
just,
she couldn't have gotten that at a state school.
No way. No way.
No way. So do you think live theater is still relevant, more relevant?
I would
less
say
relevant?
It's in its zenith point right now.
So, really?
Yes, right. I would say it is as relevant as it's always been, and it's needed more than it's ever been needed before.
Yeah.
You know, because especially from a Christian point of view, because a lot of times I think the church has advocated, is that the right word?
I think so.
Abdicated.
Yeah.
Their relationship with the arts.
Yeah.
And we've sort of turned them over to a more worldly perspective.
Right.
And so, and we've settled for a lot of mediocrity in what we present.
Mm-hmm.
And so in one sense, we need to pursue excellence in the world of art more than ever before, because we've lost a voice.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost an opportunity to be able to influence people in a powerful way.
Mm-hmm.
The live theater, I mean, most people, everybody I know, everybody I talk to, every kid that loves the theater mm-hmm. and wants to be involved in, it's because they went to see a live show at some point in their life, six right. years old, whatever it might be,
right.
and they can't get that yeah. that image out yeah. of their brain.
Yeah, I can still remember going to
it
live
impacts
theater.
You forever.
Yeah,
you know, so
exactly.
so what a great opportunity to just mm-hmm. you know create something in some sense that's going to be eternal.
Yes.
You know, yeah. and someone's thinking.
Right.
They're going to look back 30 years later and say, wow, I still remember that moment when
right.
that happened.
Right. So. Yeah, it is powerful. Now, do you like plays or musicals better? I know that you're
I'm sort
doing
of more,
more
of a,
plays.
Right, I'm sort of a play man because I'm not that great a singer and not that great of, you know, I can't play any music. Whenever we do music, I have to find somebody to help.
Right.
You know, but I'll tell you what, we've had some of our best shows at Union happen to have been musicals.
Do you think that's true, like, overall, that people just gravitate maybe more to musicals, you know, the popularity of the musical? I will go to Nashville to see a musical. I doubt I'm going to drive to Nashville
play.
Go see a play.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, it is unfortunate because when you make a trip to Broadway or something, that's the first you always think.
Exactly.
Nobody goes to see straight plays in Broadway unless they're from that area.
Exactly.
So, but at the same time, I think what it is it adds another level of talent to the production because
mm-hmm.
not only are you now telling a story, but I'm singing a story.
Right.
And so it requires another level of talent for the performers.
Right.
That a straight play may not have.
Right.
And so in that sense, I think that's the appeal of it
right.
more than
then
anything
Then you throw
else.
Choreography
right,
in there.
Right, yeah, choreography. I got a big band. I've
yeah.
got special, you know, usually they're big productions, a lot of special effects,
yes.
a lot of stuff going
yes.
on. So that sort of gives us a sort of a circus environment
right.
in
right.
a sense,
right.
big, giant circus environment, whereas a regular play
right.
may just force you to sit quietly
mm-hmm.
and think and
mm-hmm.
listen and mm-hmm. just be absorbed in it. It's trying to force you to empathize with what's going on.
Right.
And in that sense, if you're willing to give yourself over to that, you instead of just being wowed and entertained,
right.
you might be probed in your soul.
Exactly.
You know, so for me, I like the idea of doing something that has a real redemptive quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying musicals don't,
right.
but at the same time that really forces you to think. I mean, like recently, my favorite play that we've done here is the play Doubt,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I thought was an incredible cast. It's only
mm-hmm.
four people in the show,
right.
but that play, it deals with tremendously probing issues
mm-hmm.
that we as Christians have to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. That was a good movie, too.
Yeah, the movie version of it is quite good.
Yeah.
But again, it's not as good as the live
right,
play. You know,
right.
There's something different about going to
oh,
a movie.
Yeah.
You know, the movie doesn't care whether you're watching it or not.
Yeah.
You know, so the players, they don't know what to do if the audience is not responding the way they
right,
want to.
Right, exactly. So. And it's interesting when you see these interviews with movie actors that they always talk about wanting to do stage work because there's such a difference.
So many of them do it,
know.
Too. You know,
yeah.
The other thing, it works within continuity as well, too, where you're able to work the show from beginning
right.
to end, and so you have step by step, which builds of understanding of what your emotion might be,
exactly.
or what your objectives are,
right.
and what your goals are, what the climax is. If I'm doing yeah. a movie, I might shoot the end first and the middle second, and you know, you,
yeah.
so it's completely
yeah.
out of context.
Right.
And so for the actor, they gotta try to put all this together so that it's going to fit in
yes.
continuity-wise
right.
with what happened in the scene before, which was shot 3 weeks before.
Right,
you
know, and
so.
It's different every night. Different audience.
At least with the theater, at least, yeah, that's it. It's so
yeah.
spontaneous.
Yeah.
And I promise you, it is different every night.
And anything could happen.
Anything can go. Anything can happen at any second.
Yeah.
And so there is that sort of great anticipation. It's almost
yeah.
like watching NASCAR or something like that.
Right,
you know,
right.
So we're waiting for the wreck to happen.
Right.
So.
I'm sure you're familiar with Patti LuPone.
Yes.
Broadway diva. I was reading her memoir, but I also heard her interviewed on a podcast. And she said something about that the job of the actor was to put the audience at ease. And the more I thought about that, and I got a chance to see her in concert in New York several years ago, and I started thinking about what she said and then my reaction to her on stage live.
Whether you were at ease or not.
Yeah, and so. It's totally true. I mean, what struck me most was she came out and she owned the stage.
Wow.
And she owned everybody in that audience. And she did, thinking back now through what she said, she did put the audience at ease, because you never want to be wondering if the people on stage know what they're doing, because you get that uncomfortable feeling.
Right.
And we've all been there.
You alienate
exactly,
your audience.
Exactly. And so you need to put the audience at ease.
Right.
And when someone who is very well developed in their craft can do that night after night after night, and then, you know, be ready for anything else that may come, it's a joy to watch.
It's almost like it's effortless. Becomes
exactly.
Effortless.
Exactly.
It appears to be effortless.
Right.
And so that's
hard
a great
work.
Gift. Yeah, it's tremendously difficult and
yes.
complicated work. It's
yes.
like learning to juggle. I watch a juggler, and all they're doing is their hands are going up and down.
Right.
You know? I mean, anybody can do that. You know,
yeah.
So, but you add balls, it gets very difficult.
Exactly.
But yeah, you're right. One of my favorite actors that I've known over the years is a guy named Tom Key,
mm-hmm.
who is an actor from Atlanta who wrote the Cotton Patch Gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had him on campus before as a performer. And he told me one of the great lessons he learned as an actor was, and he felt like he got this from God, is that his job was to love the audience.
Mm.
Not wait for the audience to love him.
Because mm-hmm.
even if the audience doesn't love you, your job is still to love them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go out with that intention.
Yeah.
I'm going to love you unconditionally for the next 2 hours to the best of my ability.
Right.
And he said, oftentimes that's what puts the audience at ease.
Mm.
You know, it lets them know that it's okay to be here. This
yeah.
is a safe space for me to examine, you know, my own position and struggle on things that I might be going through.
Right.
You know, so it's
right.
nice to have that place that you can go and escape and say, I can take time to really
mm-hmm.
examine my own position.
Right. So do you ever perform anymore?
A little bit. You know, not quite as much as I would like to sometimes. I think it would be kind of fun. But the last thing I did, I do a lot for the Recreation and Parks teen and children's theater,
mm-hmm.
and then I have done some stuff for the Jackson Theater Guild a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The last show I did was a number of years ago, the play Heidi, you know, for crying out loud.
So, what were you in Heidi?
I was the grandfather, so which is really the best role in the play.
Yeah,
you know, so,
yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to do. And I have a great respect for Pat Offord, although she's now retired, but she's still directing the
right,
shows.
Right, so. Yeah. I was in some plays with Pat when I was a student here. The theater director was friends with she and her husband who taught here.
Right, right.
And they were in some shows, and I got to know Pat.
Yeah. She's a special person, really, so enjoyable to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever she calls me oftentimes and says, would you be willing to take on this role? I generally say yes,
right.
Especially if I can, if my schedule permits.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, if you stay in theater long enough, you go from the young roles to now you're doing the old roles.
I know, that's right. So it's kind of interesting to be able to still be able to do roles,
yeah.
any role really.
Yeah.
So, but it was a lot of fun to do,
yeah.
and you know, it was the little girl that played Heidi was a student at USJ. I think she's like 9 years old or
oh,
something
okay.
like that, and she was incredibly talented,
yeah.
little girl. So what a joy to be able to work directly with her, and so we were able to build a good rapport. So.
Oh, and that makes all the difference on stage,
yeah, right?
Yeah. So what is your favorite part of theater for you personally? Is it directing? Is it set construction? Is it tech? Is it getting to work with the students? Is it the acting? What?
All of the above.
All of the above.
But, you know, really for me, you know, I most people that start out in the theater always think, man, I'm going to be an actor.
Right.
You know,
right.
So then that was my goal at one point. Oh, yeah, and I thought maybe I had a little bit of talent where I could maybe do something with it. And so I've had the privilege of being able to work in the theater pretty much nonstop all my adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it's when I got to the point, you know, I was grappling a lot in a spiritual way with the death of a dream,
mm-hmm.
of in a sense killing your calling, if
mm-hmm.
you would, or,
mm-hmm.
or crucifying it, letting
yeah.
it die.
Yeah.
And because I believe that if we're willing to do that,
mm-hmm.
God somehow will give us a new vision,
right?
You know, or he'll resurrect what we've seen destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting for me to lay down acting
mm-hmm.
and then God giving me directing. Mm. And so I really feel like my ultimate calling, mm-hmm. you know, in my relationship with Christ is to be a director.
Yeah.
And so once I was able to embrace that role, mm-hmm. it's made all the difference in the world for me to say, this is my job,
right?
And I'm going to do it. I want to do it as if I were doing it for the kingdom,
right?
And so that it's a joy to do that. But that involves all of the above. It
sure.
involves getting set, built. It involves working with students. It involves working with people. It involves kind of trying to build an ensemble of cast and crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just involves putting all these things together. And it you know, it can become a monumental task at times, especially yeah. when you're faced with conflict,
right.
You know, a lot of conflict. But the theater, that's what the theater yeah. is. It's all conflict.
Maybe the next Sondheim show you could do is putting it together.
Yes, I don't know that one.
I don't know it well, but I think he has what we call putting it
together. Great title, though.
Yeah, I think that's the name of
putting it all together.
Yes, exactly.
Impossible.
So where do you see Union Theater in, say, the next 5 to 10 years?
We are... You know, this is very interesting for me because part of what's been going on in my life is I've had second theater people over the years, and they would, you know, none of them ever, it was like none of them felt like this was the place they're
right.
supposed to be.
Right.
And so we would have them for 2-3 years or something like that, and they move on to something bigger and better. No problem with that. I have
sure.
no problem with that. But it got to the place, and I know even with budgetary restraints,
mm-hmm.
that it looked like, in some ways, the theater had completely stalled out, and this is where it was going to be.
Here at Union.
You know, and yeah. then even in my prayer time, I was killing it. I was giving it over to God. I was saying, God, if we need to change it to a minor, and I just do 2 plays a year,
mm-hmm.
and you know we don't have any really I'm just trying to recruit students that aren't theater students.
Yeah.
If that's what you want— You know, then I'm willing to do whatever needs to be done. You know, mm-hmm. to do whatever you want me to do, and I felt that for a long period of time, maybe over a year,
mm-hmm.
of this sort of descent down into the bottom of the cycle, and I felt like I finally got to the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and now we're on the way up.
Mm.
And part of this bringing John in and being able to get. You know, to make that happen.
Right.
And that came from Dr. Dockery. And for me, that was a parting gift.
Mm.
And I had a personal meeting with him and just really kind of laid this whole sort of cycle out to him. Right. And his last thing to me was, well, look, you know, I'm going to do something about that.
Great.
And so he put it in to be able to, when we were in a hiring freeze, to bring
right.
John on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really excited about that. And so now it's like, there's a new energy. There's
mm-hmm.
a new excitement.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting in. The very first year that John was here, we had 6 majors come in.
Oh, wow.
You know, so we now we're up to, you know, over 10 majors.
Yeah.
And so we're going to see it build. We're able to go to more conferences. We're able
mm-hmm.
to get our students more involved in what's going on around the country in the
mm-hmm.
theater. We're able to go see more shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just freed us up. You know, so right now there's a great energy and a great excitement that's going on, and then all of a sudden jumping in and saying, well, let's tackle something as major as Into the Woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that would have never happened
right.
2 years ago
right.
or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And but now there's, you know, there's this great energy. There's this great relationship that we're having with these music students.
Yeah.
You know, they're loving their time. You know,
mm-hmm.
so even though it's very difficult and hard work,
sure.
Last night after we got through with rehearsal, we had a great cheer together.
Mm.
You know, just where it was just... You know, people excited. You know,
yeah.
So it's, you know, and it's love. You love when there's excitement in the air.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of what we're feeling like. And I mean, we're just starting to build back up. And
right.
I can't wait. In a sense, I have great anticipation
yeah.
and great faith
mm-hmm.
of what's going to happen with us in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? I don't know. But it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, so because we have a fantastic God.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Well, that sounds very encouraging.
Yeah, I am very encouraged, and it's almost like God said, look, you have a place here.
Mm-hmm.
I have placed you here.
Mm-hmm.
This is my theater.
Right.
You know, this is my department.
That's my and Holy Ghost chair.
Yeah, yeah, that's my chair, that's and I'm not giving it up for anybody.
That's right.
So I'm excited about that.
Okay, so tell us the show dates and the times and the ticket prices and all that for Into the Woods.
Okay, I'll try. We open on a week from Thursday.
which is today is Thursday.
Right, April 23rd, a week from today, and we run through the 28th, and each show is 7:30 at night. We have six performances.
Okay.
Tickets are on sale at Union Station.
Okay.
And you could just call the regular Union number, which I believe is 668-1818.
I believe you're right.
And make reservations there. Come by Union Station. They're open from 8 in the morning till 4:30 every day. Pick up your tickets.
Okay.
If you buy your tickets in advance, you save $2.
Okay.
And if you buy them at the door, it's going to cost you $2 more. So we're really advising people to maybe, you know, get over here or call and then work out a time to be able to pick those tickets up. Because of the savings, we have jacked up our prices because musicals are so expensive to put on, and we're just working at trying to break even as much as we can. So so it's going to be a little bit more. The ticket prices are like 8 and 12.
Okay.
You know, so
now, is that general admission or because Union students and
students get a student price, no matter where they are, and then Union personnel get the student price, and then there's a general admission price, which jumps to 12, but you can get them for 10 if you come early, or you can get the others for 6, I believe, if you come early. We still are the cheapest theater price in Jackson.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, even if you go to a children's play like Best Christmas Pageant, you're gonna pay a lot more than you pay going to Union, or if you go to the movies, you're gonna pay a lot more.
That's true.
So so we still feel like we're trying to keep that price where a family could come.
Okay. And it's six performances?
Six shows. Okay. We do a
matinee
show,
in there
and there's a Sunday matinee at 2:30.
Okay.
So it's
You're not doing any crazy midnight shows, are you?
No, no midnight show this time. We're trying to save voices as well, too, but that would have been not a bad idea maybe to throw in that two shows back to back.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. I'm looking forward to seeing the show, and I know it'll be a great show, and I know you've been working hard, and all your folks in the theater department have been working hard on it.
Oh, they've put in hours, countless hours. Then there's also daytime rehearsals where they go in personally with the music director and can have rehearsal time with him during out the day. Yeah. So it's really been, I mean, they're working. They are working.
Yeah.
We got work to do, but we're excited that hopefully by some early next week we'll be in performance shape.
Right. Yeah. It's always exciting to know you're about to open a show, and always terrifying at the same time.
It's terrifying. Yeah. That's the thing about risk, and that's one of the things that the play is about too. Risk can have great failure, but it can also have great reward. For those that don't take risks, their lives are nothing.
Yeah. They're bland. Yeah. Very good. Well, David, thank you for your time today. I've enjoyed the conversation very much.
I've always
appreciated you. And quickly, I remember the first time we ever met. You probably don't remember this. I was living in Brownsville, where I'm from, and we were doing a Christmas carol. And I thought it would be kind of cool to have smoke on the in one scene. And so I called and asked if I could borrow a smoke machine. And you were just here.
Right.
And you didn't know me. And you were very gracious and let me borrow the brand new smoke machine that had never been used before.
Awesome.
And I thought, well, that's really nice. And I'll take good care of this. And then on a subsequent show years later, I think you let me borrow the same smoke machine. Of course, it had been used a few times.
It's no longer new. But now it no longer works. Did you break it?
No. I brought it to you back. I brought it back to you in working order. So I've always appreciated you from the very beginning, and I certainly appreciate you and wish you much success with the show and in the future of Union Theater.
Well, thank you so much, Paul, and I feel the same way toward you, and I love being able to work with you when we did the show Proof. That was
cool. Oh, yeah.
Quite an experience for me.
Yeah.
I hope it was for you.
Yeah,
too.
It was an interesting experience.
Complicated show.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, and we will see you in the theater, and we will be right back after this. I'd like to thank David Burke once again for joining us on today's podcast. The dates of the show, again, are Thursday, April 23rd through Tuesday, April 28th. And if you go, I know you will be in for a treat. Also, if you are interested in finding out more about Stephen Sondheim or musical theater in general, we have lots of resources in the library, so come by and check some of those out. And as always, we thank you for listening, and we will talk to you later. Far off kingdom.
there lived a young maiden.
Careful the things you say, children will resent. Careful the things you do, children will see. Which way to turn?